Good morning, everyone. Good to see you. Always good to have our visitors. We're just thrilled to have you here to be with us, to worship with us. We're kind of sparse this morning. Several are missing, but we have a very urgent bulletin this morning, and the elders have been talking about this and been brought to our attention. We've been taking note of this. Family values under attack in America. You know, history teaches us that December the 7th, 1941, is a date that will live in infamy. Or should we say in national shame and regret. Because on that day, our country was surprised by the attack of a known enemy. It was the well-planned military strike by the Japanese Navy against our naval base in Pearl Harbor on the morning of December the 7th, 1941. The attack was a complete surprise. The enemy's planes, 353 of them, came in two different waves. The first hit their target at about 7:53 a.m., the second at 8:55, and by 9:55 it was all over. And left behind was chaos. 2,403 dead, 188 planes destroyed, a crippled Pacific fleet that included 8 damaged or destroyed battleships. And while this attack came as a very stunning shock to the American people, it shouldn't have. Because in 1940, Japan had occupied French Indochina, which is now, we know it as Vietnam. And the leadership of America was well aware of the threatening intents of the military-led nation of Japan to take control of the Far East region of the world. In fact, shortly after the attack on Pearl Harbor, Japan was able to expand her control over a large territory that extended to the borders of India on the west and New Guinea on the south. And that all happened within 6 months of the attack at Pearl Harbor. When President Roosevelt made the statement, December the 7th, 1941, was a date which will live in infamy, he was really admitting that it should never have happened. Well, this morning I want to talk about an ongoing attack that is very close to home, and it's rapidly accelerating towards disaster. And I'm sure that all of us are aware of it to some degree, and however, I think we might be surprised at the rapidity and the intensity of the current attack. And I'm talking about the attack upon the family. The family as instituted and still recognized by God as recorded in Genesis chapter 1 verses 27 and 28 and 31. And it says, God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over everything that moves upon the earth. And God saw that all that he made, and behold, it was very good. You know the words, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, are the very essence of the family. Family in the Old Testament Hebrew is defined as a seed, sowing, or offspring. In other words, descendants. In the New Testament, family has the meaning of lineage, which is derived from the Greek word for father or parent. So therefore, we find that parents and children constitute the family, which is presently under very heavy bombardment from the unified forces of the devil. Never forget, Satan is smart. He knows exactly where to attack. Because the family is the basic building block and fabric of society. The family is the sustenance and the source of order in all rational life and activities of this world. You know, without the family, the world could not function properly and, in fact, would cease to exist. Therefore, this is an urgent call to all leaders, teachers, grandparents, parents, and young people at Riverside Road to not allow ourselves to be surprised by a preemptive attack on the family, destroying the sacred values established by God. And you know, I really appreciated one of our parents with young children bringing to the attention of the elders some alarming statistics from the 2010 census information. And some of these were reported in a recent copy of the News and Leader in an article entitled, "Census Results Show Quickly Changing Nation and Values." The article opened by saying, and I'm going to just kind of be quoting down through there with some quotes from the article and insert some of my thoughts too. But it began by saying, and I quote, "What changes two decades have wrought? The U.S. is bigger, older, more Hispanic and Asian, and less wedded to marriage and traditional families than it was in 1990. It is also less enamored with kids, more embracing of several generations living under one roof, more inclusive of same-sex couples." The article continued to report that based on the 2010 census, the end of the first decade of the 21st century marks a turning point in the nation's social, cultural, geographic, racial, and ethnic fabric. And I'm still quoting, "It's a shift so profound that it reveals an America that seemed unlikely a mere 20 years ago. And it is one that will influence the nation for years to come." Now here's another statement that I think should really open our eyes. "The changes over just two decades stuns even the demographers and the social observers." Cheryl Russell, who was the former editor-in-chief of American Demographics magazine, stated, she said, "It was always predicted that we would be diverse, but it's happened faster than anyone predicted." She said, "The most probative evidence of the cultural revolution the nation has undergone in the last two decades lies in the first government reporting of same-sex households." Russell made this very short sentence statement. She said, "It is huge." And usually changes in attitudes occur when one generation replaces another. But this happened faster. You know, back in the 1990s, people were still thinking of family like what we saw on TV sitcoms, mainly mom, dad, and two kids. And that was just kind of stuck in people's mind as the norm. However, the definition of the traditional nuclear family, that is, a married husband and wife with their young children, has very quickly evolved into a grab bag of alternatives. The family is now considered by a large percentage of the population to include a wide variety of living arrangements comprised of unmarried, partner, couples, both same-sex or opposite sex, sometimes with their own or related children. Another area that's really shocking to me is that only one-third of households now have children. And having children has increasingly become detached from marriage. My primary objective of this lesson is just to alert and to warn of the utter disregard and corruption of God's principles and values regarding the family. So if time permits this morning, I'm going to touch on a few scriptures regarding the family. But first, the following are going to be a few very sobering statistic facts that should draw attention our attention to the seriousness of the assault upon the family. You know, at the crux of many of these issues is the rapidly changing views on premarital sex. That is, having sexual relations before marriage. In 1969, 68% said it is wrong, and 21% said it is not wrong. 40 years later, only 32% are saying it is wrong, while 60% say it is not wrong. Now, that's just been a complete reversal of views in a relatively short period of time. And I think that's what contributes to many of the problems. And I'm going to continue to give you some statistics on that. I want you to notice the share of births by unmarried women has risen 26% from 1990 up to... Let me state that again. It has risen from 26% in 1990 up to 41% in 2010. That's an increase of 48%, almost 3% per year increase of births by unmarried women. And among the 18 to 29-year-old women, it's 51%. Among Hispanics, 53%. Among the black community, 73%. Indeed, I think this is most alarming. And it's just one of the little snapshots of the immoral world that our young children are up against. So need I say, they need our help. Now, young parents need our support and help in these critical formative years of nurturing. You know, research evidence proves that the definition of the family is moving further and further away from the meaning that of the family that God instituted 6,000 years ago. Today, how does the world answer the question, what is a family? Well, 99.8% say a family is a husband, wife, and kids. Okay, well and good. 92% say a family is a husband and wife without kids. Smaller percentage there. Now, from here on, the public opinion is opposed by a substantial margin in some cases to God's definition of value, because 83% say a family is an unmarried man and woman living together with kids. 39.6% say a family is an unmarried man and woman living together. 33% say a family is a gay male couple. Now, another problem, that a very troubling issue, is the practice of cohabitation, that is, living together outside of marriage. Between 2009 and 2010, there was an unusually large increase of 13% in the cohabitation of opposite sex couples. This is not counting same sex. This is opposite sex couples. 13% increase in 1 year. That's compared to 5% increase between 2007 and 2008. And a disturbing fact about this, that 50% of the general public consider it a good thing for couples to live together without being married. Now, this would include a sizable percentage of Americans that call themselves Christians, because somewhere around 75% of the total population is said to be Christian. But I find it very noteworthy that these family issues are causing a lot of concern. A lot of concern even among the non-religious social demographic community. They're alarmed. They're stunned. Therefore, for our religious family, these alarming issues should trigger the red alert. That is, a severe warning, just like the Homeland Security's warning indicating a severe risk of terrorist attack. We're being attacked. And we must never forget we are dealing with the precious young lives that are in danger of being swept along by the torrent of changing attitudes and morals regarding the family. And I say, brothers and sisters, we must take action. So what's our plan of attack? Well, starting with this lesson and continuing throughout the rest of the year, or as long as it takes, the elders will be leading and working with our preachers, teachers, parents to promote a greater awareness of these vital situations affecting the family. In fact, Brother Lewis Garvey will present a lesson on February the 19th when he's visiting with us concerning the vital relationship between the family and the church. And in the meantime, our own teachers will be preparing lessons on the family to give at selected times intermittently down through the year. It won't be just in succession one right after another. They'll be on either Sunday morning or probably maybe Sunday evening service. And so if any of you have any suggestions for topics that you would like to have discussed, things that may be a problem in your family or that you've noted, well, write them on the bulletin board. I have a list back there that you can write down your suggested topic or present them to the elders, either way. But today, as time permits, we're going to consider some of the scriptural precepts and principles that are vital to nourishing and admonishing our young people regarding these family issues. You know, first, it's very imperative, I believe, that children first learn to honor and obey their parents. This is the first commandment with promise. And if this lesson is not learned early in life, all nurturing and admonition will be for naught. Ephesians, the 6th chapter, verses 1 through 3, says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother," which is the first commandment with promise, "so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth." It is so important that each child is taught, if they fail to honor and obey their parents and the Lord, they will not have a long, happy life. Another great principle about parents and children is recorded in Deuteronomy, the 12th chapter, verse 28. "Be careful to listen to all these words which I give to you." This is Moses talking to the children of Israel before they entered the promised land. He said, "Listen, I want you to be careful and listen, so that it may be well with you and your sons after you forever. For you will be doing what is good and right in the sight of the Lord." Also, some very good teaching in Psalms about the happy family. And thanks to Larry for reading the 128th Psalm. And it was probably written by Solomon, who we've been talking about, who was a wise man in a lot of instances and sometimes not. But he probably penned these words. He said, "How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in His way. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy, and it will be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion, and may you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Indeed, may you see your children's children." In other words, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. And then he closes by saying, "Peace be upon Israel." Also, in order to properly nurture To nurture and admonish your child, it's very important that parents instruct their children in the proper spiritual manner. Now, as you note, I'm just giving you little snippets of these different areas, but these are things that can be complete lessons that are needed, that we need to give. But in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, it says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord." And in Colossians 3:21, a very similar passage says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they may not lose heart." It is also extremely important the father and mother practice what they preach, and especially by setting a good example in the family relationship of the husband and the wife. Colossians 3:18 through 19. "Wives, be subject to your husbands, as is fitting in the Lord. And husbands, Love your wives and do not be embittered against them. Is this what your children observe in your house? Manoah was the father of Samson. And he provided a really great principle on child rearing in Judges, the 13th chapter, verse 12. Here he was talking to the angel of God that came to Manoah and his wife, telling them what their son Samson was going to be, what his life was going to be like. And Manoah said in the 12th verse, "Now when your words come to pass, what shall the boy's mode of life, what shall be the boy's mode of life and his vocation?" Well, I think that's a very good question to be for us to think about and to be maybe to be addressed in a future lesson. How can parents impact the mode of life and vocation of their children? Another good point to keep in mind, it is vitally important that our children's mind be turned to the Lord at an early age. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter and verse 1, "Remember now thy Creator in the days of your youth. Behold, the evil days come and the years draw nigh when you will say, I have no delight in them." But you know, before parents can expect their children to draw nigh unto God, they must set the example. And you know, of course, there's many, many other issues involving the threats to the family that need to be discussed. And so I hope you'll be thinking about these. All of you speakers and teachers, be thinking about what you're going to be, what you would like to help the congregation with, to help our young families, and to help our young children, our young people. For instance, and I'm just going to name a few of these things that I have listed and thought about, and that Bob and I have talked about. The extreme importance of selecting a believing mate. Very important. The fact that sexual immorality, that is, all sexual relationships outside of marriage, are works of the flesh that will keep us from inheriting the kingdom of God. That's serious. What are the problems related with divorce? What does the Bible teach about homosexuality? And we also need to really stress the importance of regular home Bible study and regular church attendance for the whole family. Here's another one. How should we balance between work and family? What are the special issues of a blended or extended families? What can we learn from Bible parents, whether good or bad examples? And then I think we need to really pay close attention to the instructions on being a parent like Hannah. A parent like Hannah. Remember, Hannah was the mother of Samuel. That is, we need to be teaching and encouraging our parents in their efforts to raise their children to be enthusiastic servants of the Lord. Very important. You know, these and many other lessons on the family are going to be considered as we try to work and to help one another prepare our young people for productive lives as that they can grow up and be godly parents in the kingdom of God and in His church. And I really encourage you, I don't know if you've got the bulletin yet, but there'll be some at the back. Pick them up. I encourage you to read the article in the bulletin today. In closing my message this morning, my closing prayer, I hope, will be each parent's daily prayer. And that is, closer to You, Lord, closer I pray. Help me draw closer to Your will today. My children are watching what I'm going to do. So, Lord, help me draw closer to You. And I think if we will all keep that in our minds, and the closer and closer that we can get with God, the more we're going to be able to help one another, the more strength we're going to have as we struggle with all the problems of life, and especially with this vicious attack that's coming from Satan on the values of the family. We're going to leave the lesson with you this morning. If there's any here subject to the call and to become a Christian, you have something you need to bring before the congregation, or you want to place your membership here at Riverside Road, we ask you to come while we stand and sing.